Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markwitz, and I'm speaking today with Eric Wetterling, founder and editor of thehedgelesshorseman.com. Eric is the Hedgeless Horseman, and it's always great talking with you, Eric, just to get your thoughts on how you approach value investing, how you navigate difficult times like we've seen in the mining stocks. And we were talking off mic before we started recording just about some of the transactions we've seen in the marketplace lately. We mentioned briefly the takeover of Gold Standard Ventures, GSV is the ticker for that, by Orla Mining. And we were talking about how this was one of the development stories of the day back in 2016, you know, a couple years back. I think it got up to be a 350 stock at one point. And just recently, it was taken over by Orla Mining. And a lot of investors that had been holding that stock for years for the big liquidity event, which was the takeover by a larger company, that day finally came. But most people lost money on that deal. It wasn't a deal that was well received by long-term investors. And we were just mentioning how with a lot of people's approach, they're in these development stage companies or maybe even small producers hoping and waiting for this big day where they'll have this big milestone. Maybe it's a big economic report or maybe it's a takeover. And often when those events come, investors have lost money. And you were mentioning that your approach is totally different, Eric, that you're looking at things more from a probable growth standpoint. What could you position in now when prices are beat up that have much better odds of probable growth because of the work they're doing? I'd love you to unpack that idea for our investors.
Yeah, I mean, to start off with, I mean, when I got into the sector around 2015, I think I started out buying, you know, the big deposits and pre-discovery plays. Basically, I looked for, okay, companies that have, you know, most amount of gold or silver. And typically, you know, the get rich quick tomorrow thing is to be in pre-discovery place, because back then I thought the only way to have a multi-bagger or a 10-bagger is to be lucky on that discovery hole, which is also not true. But so I had a lot of misconceptions, but I got lucky actually with the optionality plays like Bear Creek Mining, etc., because that was trading at a, you know, multi-year low. And when sentiment got back in the sector, that actually went up like 500-600%. But that was more luck than anything else, because obviously Bear Creek Mining hasn't really done much in sort of value creation even since then. So that's 7 years, kind of to the point, I think, with Gold Standard Ventures. And we talked about, I think, Tower Hill Mines, etc. So it's like, that's why I don't like or prefer pre-discovery plays, because the payoff doesn't make sense relative to the risk from in terms of the discovery hole. And mature place, if you're waiting for something to get acquired, that might be never. So you might have the same quote trading sardine. They create almost no value over a 10-year period, but they dilute and the payoff never comes. So it's like you're destined to lose money in that unless you are a good sentiment trader. They're kind of like you. It's like, yeah, you can buy low and then you can sell high and you have the discipline, etc., to realize when it is low and when it is high. My approach, it's taken years, but nowadays I am mostly focused on low maintenance strategy of hodling growth stories. Because, okay, if 2 years passes for a trading sardine and they can't create much more value, because let's say Tower Hill Mines, for example, if you're already at 14 million ounces, how easy is it to triple that amount of ounces? How can you grow the value by three times? That's going to be incredibly hard. But if you go into a, let's say, early discoverer, they've actually made a discovery hole, for example, you're probably looking at growth. If they, you know, do a small drill campaign, they hit something, they're probably going to hit more. And it's much easier, obviously, to go from 500,000 ounces, for example, to 1.5 million ounces than to go from 10 million ounces to 30 million ounces. That might be impossible, but like 1.5 million ounces, that's typically doable if it's a pretty good system. So that's what I try to stick to nowadays. My main focus is probable growth on a rolling 12 to 24 month period, because regardless of what happens in the market, regardless of what the sentiment is, I simply think that on average, my portfolio is going to contain more ounces than it did a year ago or 2 years ago. And even if the sentiment is pretty much as crap as it is now, if an ounce in the ground is valued at $20 per ounce, if you find three times as many ounces, the company overall, even in a crappy sentiment, is probably going to be valued at least a bit higher than it was a year ago. And if sentiment changes, I mean, if we get a 200% boost on every ounce and they up the ounces by 200-300%, I mean, that's a multiplier effect.
Well, let's dig into that concept a little bit more, and maybe we can use a couple specific examples that you could pull out of your portfolio and just share with us. But when I hear that, it makes a lot of sense to me, Eric, because there's a lot of companies that have a mature asset. It's a known entity, like the International Tower Hill Mines. They've had 14 million ounces of gold for a while now, and it may bob up and down with sentiment. And there's times where it's gone down by 90%, shot up by 300%, gone back down by 70%, shot back up by 200%. So you could play those moves. You made the same point with Bear Creek Mining. Or you could get into a company that maybe has 200,000 or 500,000 ounces, but you believe they're going to have 1 million or 1.5 million or 2 million ounce deposit. And so you can see that is the probable growth. Their drill program, the team, the project, you can see how this thing could grow by 3 times, 4 times, 5 times because of the work they have lined up. Could you maybe unpack that a little bit further and maybe give us some examples of ones you're watching right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think two pretty good examples right now is like Snowline is one of them, Snowline Gold. They just announced, I think today actually, they did a 340-meter step-out hole, I think, and they are seeing visible gold like they did in the other holes, which hit like 100 meters or 1 gram per ton. They have geophysics, they have soil sampling that suggests that this is, you know, the system could be a lot larger and there might be even more systems right next door, pretty much, on their Gracie target. So it's like, do I think there's a pretty good probability that those holes, which they had like 100% hit rate in, is going to grow? Yes, I think so. So it's like, give these guys 10,000 drill meters. I think they have will have found more gold. Another thing or another case is like Timberline. Okay, so they twinned their RC holes, I think it was last field season, with diamond holes. And all of a sudden, the grades jumped. So they hit like 40 meters of 5 gram per ton or something. And two, the southern hole and the northern hole are like 500 meters apart. Do I think some of those coming diamond drill holes will hit something similar and they can, you know, start to expand and tie together and will increase their metal endowment? Yeah, I think that's a pretty good bet. It's a Carlin system after all. They know basically where the fault lies, etc. That's probable growth to me. And then we also have Goliath Resources, maybe one of the best examples of that. It's like they just announced a 1 to 1.5 kilometer step out hole, or they actually, I think, announced recently they had done a few. All of them hit mineralization 1 to 1.5 kilometers away from where they drilled the Shorebet zone. And that drill campaign hit in every hole. So, okay, it looks like a seriously robust system, could be huge. They so far have 100% hit rate. We don't know the assays of these recent step out holes yet. But it's like, if there's any store I think will have probable growth, that would be a case like Goliath Resources. So whatever sentiment does, whatever the price of gold is, I think give these guys more drill meters. And in a year or after this field season, I think they will have increased their inferred, quote, resource by a lot. So whatever happens by the market, whatever the market prices on an ounce in the ground, whatever, there will be more to price in. Again, unlike most mature plays where maybe almost nothing has happened in terms of value creation in a year, and then you add dilution. So I don't like that at all. So my focus has boiled down to now, you know, years later from when I started out, I'm going for the, you know, Lassonde curve, post-discovery, probable growth. And at one point in time, of course, any of these exploration stories will reach a mature state. If they find, you know, multi-million ounce system, then it's going to, you know, the growth potential is going to peter off, basically. So maybe you look for another company that has just made a discovery where they can easily, you know, triple the amount of ounces in the next year or two.
Well, so that was going to be my next question to you. We've talked about, you know, the more mature stories. At one point in time, they were probable growth stories. They didn't have all those ounces yet. They did have a good team at one point on the exploration side that was drilling and growing their resources. So if and when we get to the point where companies like Timberline, Snowline, Goliath have a couple million ounces of resources and they're in economic studies. Is that the point where you would exit the story to look for the next one?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one other example is like, we know Great Bear was one of the big success stories. They kept growing and growing and growing and growing. And you had multiple, you know, 30 to 50% corrections. And that at the top before it ramped for the buyout, I mean, that was a slightly negative trend for almost 2 years. They still kept on growing, but it was already mature back then. So it's like, yeah, in hindsight, you were, quote, saved because the bid came in from Kinross. But if that bid hadn't come, we had no, I mean, that was such a good project. So it was, you know, high likelihood of it actually being bought. But that's not easy for a retail investor like me to estimate, let's say. So what would happen? Where would Great Bear be trading today if, you know, there wasn't a, you know, potential leak or whatever, or that the actual bid from Kinross came? I have no idea, but I would assume it was would be way lower than where it got sold. So it's like, that's going to be hard to quantify. It's like at what actual point, but I guess it's by the law of a big number, let's say, if you get up to 8 million ounces, per definition, it's going to be quite a bit harder to go, you know, multiply that, because there are simply not many 16 to 30 million ounce systems around. And of course, it also ties in, what other opportunities do you have? If there are no good probable growth opportunities, maybe you stick with the slower grower, because it's still growing. It's still better than a trading sardine, which might never be acquired at least. So it's, you know, again, it's like always, it's more of an art than an absolute science. So it's just be mindful of what the relative cases are. And if you find something that made a discovery, maybe you would have sold your Great Bear when it, the growth was starting to peter off. And you could catch the next Great Bear and ride that for 3 years, for example.
Well, and just one more question. Let's rotate back to the front end of the cycle. And that is, you know, a pre-discovery story has zero gold, zero silver, zero copper. They don't have anything yet. They just have a dream and some land and some money. And they're going to go start doing the groundwork, the surface work, the channel sampling, the mapping, the, you know, the IP surveys, and then eventually get to drilling. You've learned over time that those have a lot higher risk, and there isn't any proof in the pudding yet, so to speak. So at what point do you get excited? Is it after the discovery hole? Is it after a series of discovery holes? At what point do you feel good that there is a little bit of margin and safety, but there's still all that growth in front of them?
Typically, I would say, I mean, after the discovery hole. I still keep in mind the Kenner Land study, which basically, I don't remember the exact numbers, but if you drill a 100 gram meter hole within the first 10,000 meters that's been drilled on the project, that's a very good sign, etc. And there's obviously some, you know, characteristics of the system, for example, like Goliath. Okay, I went kind of heavy into that even before they made a discovery. And the reason for it being that they had outcropping mineralization for like 1 kilometer or something. And the numbers were good. It looked very robust. It was, you know, at least a few meters thick. So that was like, okay, this looks like a very robust system. So I felt actually comfortable in taking a larger position there. And that proved to be the case. And then we have, you know, stories that might have so many targets that you think that, yes, this is early stage exploration, but they have so many targets that I think they will hit at some point in time. And that's more of a balance of probabilities. But otherwise, it's like anyone can look at any discovery story, any successful discovery story. And that's probably true for Gold Standard Ventures, which again was the market darling for a while. I think that I'm just looking here at the chart. I mean, it hit a low of 50 cents and then it ramped to, you know, $3-4, etc. So the big returns in any discovery story comes after the discovery hole. And it's just, we think we need to be in before that. But if you look at how many Great Bear there are compared to how many pre-discovery exploration companies there are, the odds are really not in our favor. So it's like, in my opinion, we're taking huge amount of risk, like 97% chance of any maiden drill campaign ending in failure. And the reward the day after the discovery hole is seldom more than 50 to 100% because it takes days or even weeks for the market to digest a discovery hole. So from that standpoint, that's probably the absolutely worst scenario to be in, to be heavy in pre-discovery plays, unless there are you know, the context is in such a way you have, you know, outcropping mineralization, or you have very high soil anomalies or whatever, or it's right next to some, you know, it's an extension of a known system that's very predictable. So there are exceptions, but it's like, I think the single best thing people can do for their own long-term results is drastically draw down on the money they invest in pre-discovery plays, because the numbers don't lend support to that being a good strategy. But that's what people think they need to do to have good returns. But on the, you know, flip side of the coin, you could actually just become, let's say, you could be a try to become a good trader like yourself. I mean, you can ride the tower hills, etc., from bottom to peak. It's just, it's not my cup of tea. I'm trying to make my investing strategy as simple as possible, have a longer term horizon. I have a, you know, probable base case 2 years from now. So then I buy and just hodl, basically. So I don't want to be a trader. I'm not good at being a trader. I don't want to take the huge amount of risks of pre-discovery plays, because 95% of them are not going to find a discovery. So this is how my strategy has evolved. It's not for everyone, but I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think it's very low maintenance if you're diversified enough.
Well, I appreciate you unpacking that for us, Eric. And it's a great to hear how different investors approach investing in this space. There's all different types. Some people love royalty plays. Some people are only in producers. Some people are only in pre-discovery plays, hoping that they get lucky with that lottery ticket. But your point is that after the discovery hole, there's still plenty of time to get in place before lots of other upside. And if it's a good discovery hole that's going to have a lot more following it, you're going to start following that story more closely. And as they grow the resources, that's the part of the Lassonde curve that you like to focus on as you hold those companies as a value investor. So I think it's a good approach. I think it's something that people can take a page out of your book and look at their portfolio and look at the companies they're invested in. And just for disclosure purposes, are any of those companies you mentioned sponsors or anything you're invested in?
I'm invested in all. I am sponsored by Goliath and Timberline. And to your point also, just one final point, it's like, old me would take profits after a discovery if I was in prior to the discovery hole on the 50-100% pop, which again makes no sense. I'm typically, I load, if I have a position already and a company makes a discovery, I typically increase my position after a 50% to 100% pop, not decrease.
Okay. Well, so you press your bets when it's working, then you press your bets and you get a more concentrated position. So another tidbit of advice from Eric here at the end of the show, but great. Thanks for sharing that, Eric. And if people like getting Eric's thought, definitely click on the link below. It takes you over to the Hedgeless Horseman. Eric, always great having you on the KE Report.
The same, Shad. Thanks.